most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal today to help end prohibition in America. We can do it together. Just make sure to make your donation or join Normal today at norml.org. Prohibition won't stop until you get involved. And there are lots of ways to get involved with Normal. Are you on Second Life? Well, check out Normal's office there at Second Life. You can get a free Normal t-shirt for your avatar up there. Just look around for Normal on Second Life. There's a lot of cool stuff happening up there. There will be an official Second Life Normal office opening on September 6th. We're going to have music. We're going to have a little party there on Second Life. So get your avatar spiffed up and ready to go. In the audio stash today, we've got news from Denver. That's coming up next. We also have an interview with Mason Tavert of Normal in Colorado and also Safer Choice for Enjoyable Recreation, or Safer in Colorado. Let's get to our news from Denver and our interview with Mason Tavert. Our news today. Denver voters to decide on pot deprioritization ordinance. Denver voters will decide on a municipal measure this November that instructs city officials to de-emphasize marijuana law enforcement. Sponsored by Citizens for a Safer Denver, the ballot initiative directs the Denver Police Department and the City Attorney's Office to make activities related to the investigation, citation, and/or arrest of adult cannabis users their lowest law enforcement priority. It would also appoint an 11-member marijuana policy review panel to monitor police activity as it pertains to cannabis law enforcement. Seattle voters passed a similar law in 2003, which led to a 75% reduction in citywide marijuana arrests. Several other cities, including Santa Cruz, California, Missoula, Montana, and Columbia, Missouri, have enacted similar initiatives in recent years. Supporters of the Denver measure note that non-felony pot arrests in the city rose dramatically between 2005 and 2006 and are now at record levels. In 2005, Denver voters approved an ordinance that sought to abolish civil and criminal penalties for the possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana by citizens aged 21 and older. However, local police disregarded the municipal ordinance, instead electing to enforce state cannabis laws, which mandate a civil fine for minor marijuana possession offenses. Joining us today to discuss the initiative further is Mason Tevert, the coordinator of Safer in Denver. Mason, welcome back to the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Great to speak with you today, Mason. Now, the Denver City Council has put the initiative on the ballot, but they also entertained the idea of enacting the ordinance outright. Tell us what happened there.
Yeah, our Denver City Council is really not representative of the people here, and they basically set out to try to thwart this initiative in any way possible. And one of their really bright-minded ideas was to simply enact the measure so that they could immediately take it to court. But lo and behold, they opted not to do that, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did so because they might be worried that the courts would uphold it, as other courts have around the country, the most recent being in Santa Barbara, where the state superior court held that this type of lowest law enforcement priority initiative perfectly legal. So they kind of chickened out, and we called their bluff, and they ultimately decided not to go ahead and enact it, and they're going to be referring it to the voters.
So this goes before voters in the fall, and based on the response to the first municipal initiative there in 2005 and also the petition process recently, it seems like voters are pretty psyched to get their voice heard on this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, not only did we have so many people sign the petition, but it's also the third year in a row that people were asked to sign a petition. And you know, anyone who's been stopped at a grocery store and asked to sign something knows that it's not easy. It's not something that people readily do all the time. So the fact that we've managed to pull this together three times in a row really goes to show how much support there is. And the Denver Post had a little poll going on accompanying one of their stories about this whole city council ordeal, and that poll showed that there was, of the somewhere around 1,000 people voting, about 80% support for this. So we're definitely looking pretty good.
Wow, that is impressive. And Mason, how has local media treated the initiative?
It's really this, we couldn't have asked the council for any more help than they've given us with drawing attention to this. I mean, just by coming up with that harebrained scheme to enact this, they made this a far more entertaining story for the press, and it's already become quite a big deal, and it's led to extensive coverage these past few days, and it's only going to keep growing because while the city did signal that they are going to refer this to the ballot, it is still going to come up for a final council hearing this Monday, August 27th, and we're trying to get as many people out to that meeting as possible at 5 p.m. in front of the city county building. So we hope to just continue this momentum.
Absolutely. It's hard to say.
You've taken on this new initiative because of an increase in marijuana possession arrests in Denver since the municipal ordinance calling adult possession in pass, but are police directly responsible for this policy being
failed? You know, I think that they were charged with marijuana possession in the end when they challenged the cases and the charges were dropped. They only do have to ask ourselves if they're willing to drop the charges, if they're very able to drop the charges in someone's life. Why aren't they able to refrain from prosecuting drug possession? And any time the city says that they must arrest people or they must prosecute people, it just goes to show that they're lying, because at any time they can decide not to arrest or prosecute, prove that for the same reason you might get pulled over for speeding and let go with a warning, and you could be stopped for possessing marijuana and let go with a warning, or
and Mason, the safer message is that marijuana is a safer recreational choice than alcohol. In some ways, Denver and Colorado as a state, because of the beer manufacturing that goes on there, does have a somewhat different relationship with alcohol than a lot of the country.
I do think that they have a stronger relationship with alcohol than some parts of the country. I mean, this is a state with one of the highest rates of drinking in the country. It's also a state and a city in Denver that has some of the highest rates of alcohol-related problems in the country. And when I say problems, I'm referring to, violence, fighting, sexual assault, domestic violence, and so on. And it's unfortunate that our city is forcing people to choose between alcohol and nothing and not allowing them the opportunity to make the safer choice, use marijuana, if that's what they prefer. And we're by no means anti-alcohol. We fully support adults' rights to use alcohol responsibly, but we're just standing up for people who might choose to use a less harmful drug. And I mean, whether it's, you know, people we've talked to on the street or some popular radio DJs that we've spoken to, we've heard from many people, some of which are, you know, former alcoholics or people who were engaged in alcohol-related fights and problems, who say, you know, I wish that when I go to a party and all my friends are having cocktails, I could just smoke a joint, but that's illegal and I'm a criminal because that's what I'd prefer to do. And we think that that's completely insane.
And this effort in Denver and the initiative that has already been enacted, you know, this is unique because so much news about out there is about medical marijuana. This is about recreational access to marijuana by responsible adults.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that when it comes to marijuana, you know, medical marijuana is incredibly important and really requires a lot of attention because we're talking about people who rely on this stuff to live better lives and live without as much pain as they might otherwise live with. And I used to even work on medical marijuana issues, so I'm fully supportive of that whole movement. But in the end, we need to move forward, and we need to start talking about marijuana as something that people use recreationally because the most users of marijuana do use it recreationally. And we just need to, as a movement, stop talking about marijuana as something that is, you know, a bad thing that we should allow some people to use if they're sick or whatnot. We need to start talking about it as the relatively benign drug it is and start talking about how we should be allowing people to use it to prevent other serious problems that might occur.
And, of course, a welcome side effect here would be that medical marijuana patients in Denver would have this extra level of protection as well.
It totally will. And, you know, a perfect example of that is the case of Damien Lagoy. He was one of the individuals who challenged the Denver law. I mean, basically, after we passed the measure in 2005, they continued arresting people. He was our second test case. The first one was dropped, and ultimately, his case was dropped. But this is a 47-year-old AIDS patient who is indigent. I mean, the guy lives on a fixed income of a few hundred dollars a month, which primarily goes to his rent. He doesn't have money to pay for the fees associated with medical marijuana programs, the fees for the card, paying for marijuana as he needs it, and so on. And, you know, this guy simply had a friend had brought over a small amount of marijuana, like a thumbnail's worth, and he gets busted, and he has to go to court over this, and the city is fighting him. That's insane. I mean, if someone is sick or needs medical marijuana, they shouldn't be getting harassed by police, and this initiative will prevent those types of situations from ever occurring.
And having marijuana viable for recreational use, you know, this is something particularly important to young people. You know, not that folks of all ages don't smoke pot, but, you know, just ask David Ford, there are plenty of 80-plus folks in America enjoying cannabis. But when we look at the arrest statistics, it is really young people who bear the brunt of prohibition enforcement.
Absolutely, and you know, I hate to even say it, but that our third test case is another woman, a 21-year-old college student, who ultimately was facing losing her tuition assistance. She attends Metro State College of Denver, and fortunately, they dropped that charge as well. But, you know, in the end, when we look at all this, these are all people whose lives have been disrupted because they were charged with marijuana possession, and in the end, when they challenged their cases, the charges were dropped. And we have to ask ourselves, if they're willing to drop these charges or they're able to drop these charges, why aren't they able to just refrain from citing people to begin with?
Yeah, that brings up an interesting point. And Mason, you've worked on many angles of marijuana policy out there. A lot of folks who are actually arrested are not prosecuted. We saw that in Los Angeles. But it's certainly not the common case where that happens.
It's hard to say. I mean, I definitely hear the, you know, the stories of people who are caught possessing marijuana and it's confiscated and they aren't cited, or the people who are let go and so on. But I unfortunately hear all too many cases of people who are being cited and forced to go to court and have this charge on their record. And obviously the numbers don't lie. There have been more in the city this past year than ever before in history. But, you know, you bring up a very good point in that police have discretion and prosecutors have discretion, and anytime the city says that they must arrest people or they must prosecute people, it just goes to show that they're lying, because at any time they could decide not to arrest or prosecute people. For the same reason you might get pulled over for speeding and let go with a warning, you could be stopped for possessing marijuana and let go with a warning or with a have a good day. And that's just not the case right now. They're citing people and it needs to stop.
Well, hopefully this next ordinance will pass and there will be a whole lot more have a good days out there. Well, Mason, I really want to thank you for joining us here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash, where we'll be sure to check in with you again to find out what's happening there.
Thanks a lot.
Mason Tvert is the director of Safer Choice for Alternative Recreation in Colorado. He's also on the board of Colorado Normal. We have links to their website right up on ours. Just visit normalaudiostash.com.
We'd all get shrilly, but foreigners would love the USA. He passed peace pipe all around, good voter turnout in every town to vote Willie for president of the United States. Well, Willie wouldn't bomb no countries royal, keep American troops on American soil. Maybe peace would finally get somewhere. His inauguration, he's a smoking joint, don't need no speech to make his point. Legalize our freedom everywhere. Well, don't blame me, boy, if Willie was elected, we'd all get surely, then foreigners would love the USA. He'd pass the peace pipe all around, good voter turnout in every town to vote Willie Nelson for president of the United States. Just one tune, he'd feed everybody with a cup and spoon, cornbread, greens, and honeysuckle rose. With Bobby and the boys playing in the band, he'd introduce his new economic plan and the State of the Union with a good old country show. Well, don't blame me, boy, if Willie was elected, we'd all get shrilly, and foreigners would love the USA. He'd pass the peace pipe all around, good voter turnout in every town to vote Willie for president of the United States. With Waylon and Merle in his cabinet, he'd clear up all of his tax bullshit. Maybe send some money down the Appalachian Way. Have a big old party down in Tennessee, finally set this country free. Lord, he'd show us all an unclouded day. Oh, land of cloudless days. Oh, land of an unclouded sky. Yeah, he'd show us all a place where no mushroom clouds rise. Lord, he show us all an uncloudy day. Well, don't blame me, vote for Willie. If Willie was elected, we'd all get shrilly. The foreigners would love the USA. He'd pass the peace pipe all around, good voter turnout in every town. Willie for president of the United States.
You're listening to Pod Safe Music on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
National Normal in Washington, D.C. has recently published in booklet form the groundbreaking report Emerging Clinical Applications of Cannabis and Cannabinoids, a review of the scientific literature 2000 to 2006. The booklets will be delivered to elected officials, law enforcement, and policy analysts across the country to better educate Americans about the tremendous therapeutic value of cannabis and the most striking new scientific research into possible cannabinoid therapies. Joining us on the program today is the report's author, Normal Senior Policy Analyst Paul Armentano. Paul, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Wonderful to have you on the program as always, Paul. We spoke about this report when it was first published last fall. Tell us about some of the most recent additions and updates.
Well, as people are well aware of who listen to this show, the science regarding the use of cannabis and cannabinoids for medical purposes really expands by leaps and bounds almost every day. So in the six-month period since we first issued the report, a number of new studies looking at the use of cannabinoids to treat various illnesses such as Lou Gehrig's disease, such as Alzheimer's disease, were published in the fall, and we updated the report to reflect much of this new science. We also added a foreword by one of the foremost researchers in this area, Dr. Greg Carter, out of the University of Washington School of Medicine. And he has now a quite lengthy foreword to this publication that I think is really a great addition to it.
And Paul, this week there was a fair amount of media buzz associated with Sanofi Aventis's Acomplia. That's a cannabinoid receptor blocker that's been touted for weight loss by the company. So how much of this new research is in the realm of the cannabinoid system as opposed to cannabis itself?
You know, there's a report that was published this past fall by the NIH that, like my report, was an overview of the emerging therapeutic applications for cannabis and cannabinoids. And interestingly enough, in the end of that report, they noted that there are now 27 medications pending that are based on cannabinoids. In other words, there are pharmaceutical companies that have under patent and are investigating 27 different types of drugs that are based on synthetic versions of cannabinoids. So, in fact, there is a lot of interest from Big Pharma in this area at the moment.
And when we talk about Big Pharma, so many of the diseases discussed in your report have such long-term and serious implications to individual health, but much of it can also spill over into politics when you talk about conditions associated with aging, like Alzheimer's, rheumatoid arthritis, and the like. So it begs the question, Paul, how much can cannabis challenge Big Pharma if regular Americans were better versed in the therapeutic value of cannabis?
Well, it's amazing. If you simply take the indications that we highlight in this report and you apply them to the numbers of Americans who suffer from these diseases, alone we're talking about several millions of Americans that could benefit from cannabis to treat some of these clinical indications, and particularly when we're talking about many of these age-related disorders like Alzheimer's, like Lou Gehrig's disease, or some of these progressive disorders like multiple sclerosis, diseases people live with for many, many years. Clearly, the accepted use of marijuana could take a serious bite out of the profits of many big pharmaceutical medications.
And do you think that by presenting this information on these age-related conditions, that the science will find some resonance in the generations that were literally bombarded by the reefer madness rhetoric of government propaganda?
I think so. In fact, if you look at polling, older Americans, by and large, are supportive of the medical marijuana issue. Americans over age 50, even over age 60, still show majority support, like Americans of all ages, quite frankly, for the legal use of medical marijuana. But clearly, I do think that this is a demographic that the more they learn and understand this issue, the more they will realize that they themselves can benefit in improving potentially their quality of life through the use of cannabis-based therapeutics.
And Paul, do you hope that this report in booklet form will have some impact on the regulatory bodies, perhaps the FDA?
Well, Chris, I'm not hopeful the FDA is going to be looking at this issue anytime soon, but I am pleased to report that since we've had this report published in the 64-page booklet form, we've disseminated over 2,000 copies to a number of local organizations on the ground in states where medical marijuana legislation is pending. And in fact, right now, we have booklets in the hands of activists and legislators in every state where medical marijuana bills have been introduced, as well as in a half dozen states where medical marijuana bills will be introduced in the near future. And they have received a very positive response from lawmakers and from the folks on the ground in these states that are lobbying for statewide medical marijuana reform. We do have the intention later on to also get these booklets in the hands of members of Congress, but right now we are focusing on the states that have bills in their legislatures that would either legalize the use of marijuana for medical purposes or would expand existing statewide medical marijuana programs.
And having this information available, especially in print form, which politicians love to use still, this can really go a long way to help people understand the value of marijuana as medicine here.
Sure. Many legislators and you know, many people overall are shocked to know. This report alone summarizes more than 140 published clinical or preclinical trials on the use of marijuana as a medicine that have been published in the last 5 or 6 years. There is an incredible amount of evidence now showing that marijuana holds positive medical value to treat a number of indications, many of which are indications that no currently approved pharmaceutical drugs can treat. And in many cases, as I like to stress, we're talking not just about symptomatic relief, but about the potential to alter the progression of progressive disorders that are debilitating and sometimes even fatal. There's nothing on the market, for instance, that can halt the progression of Lou Gehrig's disease, but at least in animal models, marijuana does so. There's very little on the market we can give people when they have certain types of malignant cancers to help get rid of those cancers other than chemotherapy or radiation. Yet there's evidence, once again, in animals that cannabis can get rid of cancerous tumors. So it's a very exciting time if you are someone on the research end of this.
Now, we've seen some hard science get completely politicized in America. It comes from global warming, stem cell research, even to weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. But marijuana as a medicine is really the starkest example of science falling prey to politics in America, it sounds like.
Chris, if we were talking about any drug other than marijuana, this drug would already be legally approved. So, yeah, there is no doubt that science in this realm is heavily politicized. Oftentimes, the research that does take place overseas. Other times, the research that takes place in this country is simply not publicized to the extent it would otherwise be if we were talking about any other drug.
This report, Emerging Clinical Applications for Cannabis and Cannabinoids, relies on research published in the most respected of medical journal publications out there. So, is there perhaps a growing sense in the medical and medical research community that this is a very important topic? I mean, do these editors of those medical journals ever comment on all of this cannabis research?
You know, from time, journal editors will not just run the published study, but they'll also opine about it in the beginning of the journal, and you'll see that happen from time to time. In fact, in the coming weeks, we expect actually later in this month, there will be a very significant clinical trial published on the inhaled use of marijuana to treat pain in a prestigious American journal, and once again, you will see that journal opine about it, not just run the study, and we expect that will really raise the profile of this issue, at least temporarily, within the media and within even among potentially politicians in this country. Certainly, though, if not the journals, certain medical associations, the Society for Neuroscience comes to mind immediately. They are very aware of the science and in large part are proponents of the emerging scientific research that's taking place. There clearly are investigators in some medical societies that, regardless of the fact we're talking about marijuana, are very much behind this effort and taking it very seriously.
So it sounds like there's a real sense in the research community that perhaps the laws need to change here so that more research can be conducted, because as we've discussed here on the program, those researchers really face astounding hurdles to investigating cannabis at all.
There are clearly investigators who conduct the research. that are very much aware and behind this sort of research taking place. Whether their knowledge base has yet extended to the general public of, say, physicians is another story. One would like to think that physicians keep up with reading all the medical journals, but, you know, just like you and I, they have busy lives and busy schedules, and for the most part, they don't. So in many cases, there's a learning curve. And right now you have mostly the investigators doing the research on the top half of this curve, and you have, you know, your general practitioner, your ordinary physician, somewhere near the bottom of it. And oftentimes you have the public somewhere in the middle.
And Paul, having pored over all this data and compiled and now revised this report, what are some of the things that stuck out for you as having the most immediate and profound impact?
Three things come to mind immediately. One is the potential anti-cancer properties of cannabinoids. The fact that in a number of different cancerous cell lines, whether you're talking about skin cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer, a whole host of different cancers, cannabinoids seem to kill those sort of cancer cells in a very effective manner. That's the first thing that jumps out at you when you read this publication. The other is when you look at two families of diseases, either neurodegenerative disorders like, once again, Lou Gehrig's disease or Alzheimer's disease, or when you look at the family of autoimmune disorders like multiple sclerosis, like rheumatoid arthritis, how well in preliminary studies, cannabinoids seem to not only provide symptomatic relief, but actually halt the progression of those two types of diseases. And you can run down the list of specific diseases that fit in those overall families of diseases, and you will see that marijuana, at least at the preliminary level, seems to be more effective in many cases than the standard drugs that are already available on the market.
Again, National Normal has recently published in booklet form the groundbreaking report, Emerging Clinical Applications of Cannabis and Cannabinoids, a review of the scientific literature 2000 to 2006. The booklets will be delivered to elected officials, law enforcement, and policy analysts around the country to better educate Americans about the tremendous therapeutic value of cannabis and the most striking new research into possible cannabinoid therapies. Paul Armentano is the author of the report. Paul, thanks again for joining us here today.
Thank you, Chris.
We have links to read the report online at normalaudiostash.com. If you would like copies of the booklet or to ask Paul any questions, please contact Normal via phone at area code 202-483-5500. Again, that's 202-483-5500. Or email foundation@normal.org. To Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.